This is episode 71 of Outlander Cast with Mary and Blake. All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Stars. Everyone, it is good to be back, and it's good to be back talking about Outlander. I am your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I always love this episode, this kind of episode that we have. This is the second time that we've had Allison Keen on to talk about Outlander, and I always love getting that non-biased national approach to this show, because it's so easy to get caught up in how much we freaking love Outlander. You know,
hey, like it's watch yourself.
I know, I'm just saying, it's like it's easy to get caught up in that, right?
So, for those of you who didn't get to hear Outlander Cast episode 31, where we interviewed Allison Keen before, Allison is actually the chief TV critic for Collider.com. Now, Collider.com is huge; it covers all different types of shows.
Right.
It's ginormous. So these people literally get to watch TV for a job and then talk about it and write about it. So Allison knows TV. Allison knows TV probably better than Blake Larson, which is saying something. Listen, it's her full-time job.
Yeah, she's way smarter than me.
She's
just
amazing.
Like you, she's way smarter than me.
So the other cool thing about Allison is that she has not read the Outlander series, which is part of the reason why Blake loves discussing things with her, because she doesn't know either. Whereas normally whether we go out and we talk about Outlander with friends, or we chat with our friends who are in the writers forum for the Outlander Cast blog, or even different people we interview on the show, everyone else has read the series, read the books. And poor little Blake sits there like, okay, guys. And I just have to say interesting all the time. So this is going
to
be fun.
I always have to do earmuffs. And I love speaking with Allison because I never have to do earmuffs.
No spoiler warnings with you when it's Allison.
No. She is great. So, my love, are you ready to get into this wonderful, really cool interview that we did with Allison Keen?
You bet.
All right, let's do it.
Joining us now is none other than Allison Keen. She is the chief TV critic of the entertainment website Collider. We've had her here before, folks. We want her to come back again. Allison, thank you so much for coming back onto Outlander Cast.
Thank you for having me. This is so much fun to talk to you guys.
Allison, for all of the people that are out there that are listening to this, all the tens of people that are listening to this, we had you on last season, and it was such a pleasure, such an honor to have you on, because I know you have a very busy schedule, and you do a lot of important things for Collider. But tell me, and remind me, what exactly are you doing for Collider, and what does the job entail?
Yes, I'm sort of the TV empress, I guess, of Collider. I am the TV person. I do all of our reviews. I split some of them with Chris Cabin, who also reviews for us, and I take over all of our recaps and just make sure all our freelancers are doing their thing, and so we've got all the coverage we possibly can on the TV side. So I run that side of the site. If you go to collider.com/TV, that's all the coverage we have. And right now, I'm very excited because we're doing a fall TV guide every Tuesday, reposting it with more and more reviews of shows that are coming up, because there are over, I think, 120 shows premiering in the next 2 months.
What?
So we're not going to be able to cover quite all of them, but we'll have most of them.
Well,
and that's new and returning. So,
well, I know that you were covering Outlander pretty specifically for season one, and then that coverage kind of stopped, and I was a little heartbroken by that. Could you care to shed any light on that?
Two things. One is that for a really long time when I was freelancing, recaps were like the bread and butter, and I was doing so many of them, and I sort of got burned out and was happy to let other freelancers work on our recaps for us. But also, we just sort of scaled back with recaps because we found that it's actually better to react to certain moments in episodes rather than feeling like you have to write about an episode. So we've sort of shifted the way that we cover these shows now a little bit.
So what is that difference then? Like you said, how you react as opposed to recapping them?
Sometimes we won't maybe write something up every week. So, you know, that way, because there are just so many shows. Actually, this past August, they have the Television Critics Press Tour. They do it twice a year in L.A., and they have all the networks kind of do their song and dance for the critics. And we're always really excited for the CEO of FX because he always brings a lot of data about TV and sort of what's coming and what's happening now. And right now, there were, I think, over 420 shows, scripted TV shows, this past year. And next year, they're projecting over 500.
Wow.
So the reality is we can't always watch shows right as they air live every week or even within a day or two. So sometimes, you know, if I'm a couple episodes behind on a show, I'll just like blow through it and catch up and then go, gosh, like I really want to write something on this now. So it's just kind of the reality of peak TV is it's so hard to keep up with things week to week. So we do what we can. I was really excited about the Outlander finale, though. That was one thing where immediately I was like, I have to write something up about this. But we'll get to that.
Yes, we will. So, you know, those of, you know, our avid tens of listeners on OutlanderCast, they know how much I love The Leftovers. And I think from last episode that we had together, you know, you hadn't really liked The Leftovers, and, you know, we were having a conversation but I before we recorded, but I want this to be widely known.
On the record.
On the record, that you're not too much of a fan. Is that true?
That is true. I will admit to that. I really tried with season two, but it's just one of those shows that is just, it's not for me. And, you know, as I mentioned before we started recording, Adam Chitwood, who writes for us and covers a lot of movie news for us, loves The Leftovers. And he keeps trying to convert me. And I have another friend that's, you know, really into it. And I was like, guys, it's not going to happen. So I'm sad to say, on the record, I'm not a fan.
So I say that because, you know, Mary and I obviously have a podcast for The Leftovers.
Right.
But we are indeed here talking about Outlander. So despite your, not love, let's just put it that way, of The Leftovers, tell me it has been the opposite reaction for you for Outlander of season two.
It really has. And I don't know if people remember or if you read my recaps of season one. I thought that season one had highs and lows. I thought overall it was a good show and, you know, but I had some issues with it, especially in the second part of the first season. And to me, season two fixed a lot of the issues I had. And I know that the fandom was sort of divided on a lot of things that were of how it was adapted for season two. But as someone who hasn't read the books, I loved it. I thought it was great. And it's actually one of my favorite shows of the year. And that list, like, even though there are so many shows out there, my list of very, very favorites is pretty short. So Outlander, I thought, did an outstanding job in season two.
Wow. You know, I love that you have lists because I want to know your lists of the top five things that really got you pumping about Outlander season two that made you want to go and write about it or go talk to other people about it or who brought Outlander up that list in your mind. So
yeah. So why don't we start with number five and then we'll like let
okay.
him, right? We'll
ooh, count down.
One.
Okay.
And
I
then
like
we'll go to the top one. And then actually what we want to do too is after this, we want to find out what the one thing is that you think Outlander could improve upon. After the top
three.
Five for
okay.
season three. So, but Allison, let's without missing a beat here, let's do your top five, number five.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I have them listed, but they're not in order. So give me 1 second to look.
Oh, no.
I know what my number one is.
Okay.
I think some of these are just kind of silly. Okay. So number five, I think, you know, it's always the costumes for me, and that red dress was just this moment of like perfect costuming and just perfect like emotion all wrapped up with the way that they create the show and give such detail to what the characters are wearing. And that to me, like that moment when Claire comes down the stairs and when we see her and just throughout that night, like it was just so beautifully filmed. And that to me is just one of the things that really makes the show stand out.
Now, did you like the nipple dress? I'm just going to ask. I'm going to put it out there and let the ether take it. What do you think?
What was the nipple dress?
Oh, girl, you need to go back to that episode because you're blown away by the red dress. But when Claire gets to the party and she she sees the king, he's hanging out with this girl who has...
Oh, my God, yes. No, I just Googled it, and it has come back to me now.
Yep, the swans, yep.
That one. But, like, everything that they presented of that... sort of slice of Parisian life and just how outrageous and ostentatious it was. I mean, it went along with it, you know, it kind of made sense within that context. So it was ridiculous, but.
And I think it's good that Terry Dresbach has been nominated for an Emmy this year, as a matter of fact, for the costumes. And do you think given the costumes and everything that they have done in Paris, but also Scotland too? I mean, I think it's kind of complicated to get that kind of wool and really use that actual fabric that they used back then. Do you think she's deserving of that nomination?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'm actually, like, last year, I know there was a lot of outrage for the Outlander snubs, but this year I'm part of the people that are really, really mad that Outlander only got two nominations, and they were sort of in the incidental categories. I mean, they obviously mean a lot within the industry, and I know that fans are really plugged in and know, you know, that, like, they were nominated for these things, but the general public is not going to notice that. And I just think that... Katrina Balfe was totally snubbed this year. I mean, she was incredible in season two. And, you know, I think Outlander deserved a lot, but in particular, she really was the one that I thought needed to have the nomination. But alas.
What else do you think deserved the nomination? Like your second most?
You know, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think that last year they were nominated for... score, and I don't think they were this year,
no.
Which I think is a snub, if I may say. that was one thing actually I really liked too, is how they, how Bear McCreary changed the theme song for France and then changed it back mm-hmm. when they were not in. That was just that little, just the little touches. I mean, that wasn't something I expected, and yet it made so much sense. And then when you came back and the theme was back to how it was in season one, it felt like going home. Like it just, it's such an important part of the show. So, I don't know. I'm sure you guys have talked a lot about Outlander snubs with the Emmys, but yeah.
Let's get on to your number four.
Right? Okay, number four. So this is sort of a silly one, but it was one that I repeated to other people because I just thought it was funny. But so when Jamie goes, you know, to the House of Ill Repute, he's come back and he's telling Claire about what happened and that he basically told them that she was La Dame Blanche. And she's like, so the best thing you could come up with was to tell people your wife is a witch. And I just thought that was hilarious. And that to me, like that little banter between them. And I think that this season had so much of them working as a team. And just those little moments of humor that I think are really important in a show that has so many serious things happening. Mm-hmm. That to me is something that really, I just enjoy. And that particular exchange really made me laugh.
Speaking of the serious exchanges, you know, a lot was made of the lack of sexuality this season,
yeah.
Especially by the Outlander community, just because I think some people say, and I think I agree with this, in that they were kind of sold a bill of goods a little bit. At the beginning of the season, if you recall, like that Entertainment Weekly cover, and it was like sexy and scandalous, and then all of a sudden, like there was nothing. You know, what's your take on that?
I did notice it, and it's something that's like, it was interesting because I was talking to a friend about this, and even though Claire and Jamie like haven't been together that long, she said that so many married couples that she knows were commenting like, on sort of the reality of this notion of like at first, you know, like it's just all fireworks, but then, you know, as the relationship grows, you're intimate in other ways as well, you know? And I think that was just sort of a sign of their relationship in a different way. But yeah, I mean, it was almost to the point though where like they weren't having sex at all that we were seeing, like at all. And you know, they were. And so it's sort of, yeah, it became, I think the problem is that it was noticeable, you know? I mean, there was no, reason behind it. I kind of liked in a way that they toned it down just to, you know, give some more time to their other aspects of their relationship. But the fact that we all noticed it, I think also was sort of an issue. You know, maybe there should have been a little more, because it was pretty great in season one. You know,
every once in a while I joked, I'd say, like, how did she get pregnant?
Because we saw everything in season one, and season two was a little more buttoned up, which was interesting given that it was in such, you know, especially in Paris, where you had all the sexuality that was just out there, and then to not see them in that sort of, you know, in that way was, I guess, a little jarring.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, like, when they're in episode two, when they're giving away, like, free dildos, excuse me, but when they're giving them away, it's a thing.
You can rent it, Blake.
You sorry, you're renting
free.
It.
Rent
okay.
it.
Oh, wait, who would want to? Okay, I said this
oh,
before.
Gosh.
Who would want to rent that? Like, anyway, it's like when you go from that to having nothing, and, like, even when there is intimacy, I mean, and sexual intimacy between the two main characters, I think what people really, not really watch it for, but it's a main attraction for what they watch for. Even when they actually show it, they're cutting away to black within, you know, less than 30 seconds. And, I mean, I understand the choice, but it seems like, I mean, what are we doing here? I wish they had made different choices there.
Especially since, I mean, well, obviously the two actors are super hot. I mean, that goes without saying. But also, like, they have such an amazing chemistry, which is why people are always trying to, like, pretend that they're dating in real life, because they have this fire on screen between them. And so that's what makes, you know, these scenes, these, like, sexual scenes, especially, like, the night of the wedding and stuff in season one, like, just so charged, because they just have this really great rapport. And so to not capitalize on that, yeah, seems like a very odd choice.
So what do we have as your number three favorite thing for Outlander season two?
Number three is Rupert and Angus's friendship. Because I really thought that for about three episodes there, they had sort of been forgotten in the scheme of things for a while, and you know, while they were in Paris and everything, we lost track of all of them, and to come back and have that arc be so emotional, and for it to end so tragically on both their counts, and I was watching, and I was like, one of them's gonna die. I don't know which one. One of them's gonna go, but I really wasn't expecting, like, just all of that to happen. It was just a lot, and the way that they really played up the brotherhood and allowed for these quiet moments between them and a friendship. And Angus was always such comic relief, and he never really got to have these serious moments until the battle, and, you know, right before the battle. And it's almost like he grew up in, like, a day, you know, and just really kind of got serious about things. And then we lost him. So, but he was heroic until the end. And I thought that they did a really good job of balancing the action there with these smaller character moments, and making it not just about what's happening with Jamie and Claire, but also these other characters that, you know, I really enjoyed in season one and was really happy to see return in season two. That's my number three.
What did you think about, like, that kind of rope-a-dope that they pulled there with the execution of how, you know, they kind of telegraphed Rupert was going to die, and then out of nowhere Angus came? Do you think that they executed that well?
I actually did like it, because it's interesting, because Matthew Zoller-Seats, who writes for Vulture and a few other places, he is a great, great critic and a really, really smart guy. And he was talking about Mr. Robot, actually, and talking about twists. Like, TV shows now feel like they have to have all these twists to keep audiences on their toes, because so many people watch and are like, oh, I'm going to guess what's going to happen. Like, I think I know what's going to happen. And in that case, I guess that was a little bit of arrogance on my part, where I was like, oh, I totally know what's going to happen, and I'm preparing myself for it. And I kind of like that they pulled the rug out. I thought it felt fairly real, too, you know, because in that sort of situation, in those times, like, you really would not know what kind of injuries a person had if it wasn't visible right in front of your face. Mm-hmm. There was something about it that just, especially with how Angus changed. Like I said, you sort of saw him grow up and become very heroic and wanting to sacrifice himself, and I think it just completed his story in a really beautiful way.
Yeah, for all the Mr. Robot fans out there, I know season one, the twist for season one I felt was pretty organic, but the twist for season two I felt was a hack at best. And that's my opinion. You know, it is what it is. When your show creator is apologizing for the twist as it's airing, I think that's not a good sign. But, you know, it is what it is. So, my love, go ahead, continue.
How about the next one on the list?
So, I also keep a list of the best episodes of the year. And to me, one of the very best episodes has been Preston Pans. Am I saying that right? It's weird when you don't say these things. I type them, but I don't say them.
You're saying it right.
You got it, girl. Preston, you got it.
Preston Pans. I thought that was a phenomenal episode. I thought it was so smart how they did the fight sequence in the fog, because obviously just for budget reasons, right? Like, mm-hmm. to not show everyone, but also it created this really, really scary atmosphere to not know who's where, who's coming from where, you know, their friendly fire, you know, what's happening. And the buildup had been so much, like, with Claire and Jamie knowing what's coming in a way, but everyone else sort of wanted to just jump in, you know, headstrong, like, we can do this, and then the fallout from it. I just thought, like, when they were charging into the mist and everything that happened afterwards, some of the camera shots with that, it was just devastating. I mean, I was, like, sick watching it in, like, the best way, you know? Like, I just was so nervous and upset and riveted, and I just thought they did a really, really good job with that. It reminded me of season one of Game of Thrones, I think, where there's, like, a really big battle. And in the novels, it's in, like, extreme detail. And in the show, it's like you're with Tyrion, and then he gets knocked out. And then he's blacked out for the whole battle. And then he wakes up, and it's over. And I just thought that was a really, like, ugh, you know? they obviously didn't have the budget to show it, but it was sort of the thing where, like, okay. But I just thought that Outlander was really creative with it. And I don't know in the books if it's described as being that foggy battle, but I just thought the way that they directed it. And in fact, I'm going to name check the director, who I don't have right in front of me. I'm looking it up. Is it Philip John?
I think that was Philip John.
He did an outstanding job choreographing that. I thought it was a beautiful episode.
Right, yeah, I really liked it. And one of the things that I was surprised about that episode, too, especially in the battle scenes, was how gory it was.
Yeah.
For some reason, I just didn't anticipate it to be that kind. Even with the context of the season one finale, I just did not expect it to be that level, almost like Braveheart, where you were like, whoa. And I know Braveheart's an easy comparison, but I just felt like you were really in the middle of it. Here's another movie reference, Saving Private Ryan, too.
Like, yes, very
felt
much.
Like you were stuck in that camera with that people. Did you feel like you got that feeling, too?
Yeah, it was nightmarish, you know, you really did feel that way. And I cannot remember now, everyone's doing these unbroken shots, and I can't remember if they did that in Preston Pans or not, where they didn't edit it, if it was just like one continuous motion. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? They did, it's like coming back to me now, through the fog of Preston Pans, where they did it, with it like a horse cut in front of the camera, and then you saw something happen. It was like they were really, really smart in how they did the edits, so you didn't even notice it for like quite a while. You really felt like you were there, and that to me is just the mark of a really great director, a really great editor, and it just really stood out for me as an episode.
So let's talk about your favorite item, and whatever it was, it could be anything. What was your favorite thing of season two Outlander? What got your corpuscles corpuscling?
I was really happy to see Jamie and Claire working as partners for most of the season rather than saving each other. Towards the end of the season, it kind of got back to that where it's like, Jamie's in peril, Claire's in peril, Jamie's in peril, you know, and they just are kind of like going back and forth. But for the first quite a few episodes, they were just working in tandem. Like, you know, they would always be checking back in with each other. Like, what did you get today? Like, who told you this? And okay, now go talk to this person. And I just really loved that partnership. I thought that's something we didn't really see a lot of in season one. And I think it highlighted some new aspects of their characters, especially Jamie. I thought that just brought out, I mean, to put this guy who's like taking care of horses in Scotland, and suddenly he's like dealing with intrigue with a prince and a king and, you know, major battles and like becoming a confidant to these rich and powerful people in a different country. It just was like such a, it was a change for his character, not one that I thought was completely unbelievable because he's, you know, he's presented as a really smart, cunning guy. But I really like how it highlighted that different part of their relationship. And I thought that, you know, you don't really see, before the podcast, we're talking about my favorite show this year, and it's definitely The Americans. And that's one thing I love about that show is you've got this husband-wife team who are working together. And you just, I feel like you don't really see that a lot on television. It's usually more focused on like the strife or the cheating or some drama, you know, with that. But, I just really liked seeing them together in that way. And we sort of touched on that in talking about how we didn't see them being intimate as much as season one, but I don't know. I just, there was a friendship there this year that I thought was just, I just loved. I just loved their interactions.
I like those top five.
Thank you.
You did a good job.
That is not bad.
That being said, all of these things that you have loved about Outlander season two, so much to love. If there was something that you think that the crew or any of the writers or anything could have done differently this season, what would it have been if you had to pick something?
Actually, I'll tell you one thing that really was jarring to me right off the bat was going back to the 1940s with no explanation for someone that hasn't read the books. Like, I had no idea what was going on. Like, she's suddenly back with Frank and she's pregnant, but it's not like the pregnancy before. And I'm like, where's the baby? And it was just so confusing to me. And I could not get over it for like, I mean, I think they only sent us maybe the premiere, maybe the first three episodes I think I reviewed. But I was like DMing people on Twitter, like, is this in the books? Like, what is happening? Like, did they come back to this? What is going on? I just found it so confusing. And then of course it makes sense once you've seen the finale and all connects. And even though Tobias Menzies is amazing always, you know, as Frank and Blackjack, I never kind of got over that first scene. I was so confused the whole season, the entire season. I think it kind of ruined because I kept waiting. I was like, where's the baby? What's going on with the baby? And it almost spoiled the fact that, you know, Claire goes through this horrific situation with the baby stillborn in the Faith episode. So good and so devastating. And it just, I don't know. I did not like that at all. I sort of wish they had just cut it completely and left it for the finale. And then speaking of the finale, so I had no idea what was going to happen or anything that was coming. And I really loved at the very end, that it sets up Claire going back as an older woman, you know, I mean, still super hot and rocking the 60s look like nobody else. But everything that built up to that I felt was really rushed. Whereas like most of the season I felt like went at a pretty good pace. I never felt like anything was dragging. But if anything, I just wanted stuff to have more time to really explore. And I don't know in the novel if there's a lot more, you know, side stories and things that they didn't address in the TV show. But I almost feel like this story could have been two seasons, or at least broken up sort of like how they did season one. So, yeah, I guess I just wanted more time with the characters and with some of these situations. And then the finale, I really felt like it's like, wow, here are all these characters that I don't know and her daughter. And I thought the casting was maybe a little off for that character. But everything else felt to me like it was sort of on the right path, except for that. That sort of timeline jumping was confusing for someone who hasn't read the books.
What made you feel a little uncomfortable? Well, not uncomfortable. What made you not like the casting of Brianna, the daughter, as much as you would have liked?
It's funny because, like, I think the casting is really on point on the show. I mean, I really don't have a problem with anyone, but I was just, there's something about her that I was reading some articles afterwards. Everyone was kind of like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like, it's a show that has so much subtle acting, and she almost felt like this caricature of a headstrong young woman. And I don't know if it was her or the material that just sort of was trying to, like, create this character and create a sense of her really quickly, and therefore just gave her, like, this really kind of dull material. And her relationship with Roger just felt really forced. because it would happen so fast, right? Like they had like 45 minutes to sort of establish them as like strangers and then maybe an interest and like, oh, now they're a couple and like, oh, they're going through time and you know, whatever. It just all happened pretty fast. And I don't know if you guys agree with that or not, but I know that was kind of floating around on the internet as a thing, but
I think I agree with the fact that their relationship was rushed. Like all of a sudden we were just supposed to accept the fact that, okay, they're kind of like each other here and they're like, they have each other's back. And I felt like, I don't know. I didn't believe it.
Blake, I fell for you the moment I saw you. So.
Oh, my God. Oh, you went there, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
The sad part is I felt the same way, too.
I know. Bring it. Romantic.
Yeah. You know, Allison, a lot of people, and I think I'm one of these people, said that, you know, and actually I think you said it, too. It felt like it was two different seasons. I mean, it was split up between France, and then we were back to Scotland and doing all that. It was like real political intrigue in France. Mm-hmm. And then it was a war, not swashbuckling, but it was just this kind of deep-in-the-mud war feel kind of season. Do you feel like Outlander did in itself an injustice by having these two halves together? Or do you think that the season worked well overall?
I think it worked well overall because it was exciting because so many different things were happening all the time. One thing that I didn't like, and actually it was so funny because I tweeted something about what happens between Claire and the King, because there was just, I feel like sexual violence on this show in season one, like there was so much focus on it. And season two, it just gets kind of thrown in there, like, you know, oh, Mary's raped and oh, Fergus is maybe raped. And I'm just like, these are really big things. Like, I don't, and then with Claire and the King, I tweeted something like, you know, I'm just really like, there's just so much rape on this show. And like with her, you know, I just felt like it wasn't really consensual. And my friend like called me up right away and she's like, no, it was totally consensual. She knew exactly what she was doing when she was going in there. I was like, yeah, but he's in a position of power where she doesn't have a choice. Like once she gets, you know, and then I don't know, to me, it just felt a little weird and it sort of played for laughs in a way. Cause he had like three thrusts and it was done. And so it kind of was like, okay, now it's over. But I was like, she had to like basically sell her body to free Jamie. And it just was kind of brushed off like, okay, it's another day, you know? And I thought that the show just kind of glanced over those moments. And maybe that's kind of like to your point, Blake, about the show, putting all these things together. I mean, most of the sexual violence in this season happened in Paris. And then once we got to Scotland, it was very much just focused in on the war. So maybe if it had elongated the Parisian season a little longer and sort of gotten into more of what was happening there, they could have given more time to it. But I was just really sort of disappointed, I think, especially with Fergus, because I just love Fergus so much. He was just so cute. And he had this horrific, they do intimate, I don't know in the book if it's clear, like I pretty much assumed that it was just like a full-on assault, but the fact that it didn't ever really kind of come up again, or like it wasn't really addressed, I don't know. I just felt like they were just rushing so many things. And as a viewer who doesn't know what's happening, it was exciting to be like, what's going to come next and what's going on? But then once you sit back, you're like, I really wish I could have spent maybe some more time exploring other parts of this world. And I think you guys had mentioned, too, about the Dougal scenes, maybe sort of that they sort of rushed that as well, because that to me was like the biggest shocker that happened.
Right.
Where I was like, what? This isn't Game of Thrones. They can't just kill off a main character willy nilly. It was such a powerful moment. It's like, okay, guys, we got to go. Like, pack up and leave. And I was like, oh my God. Like, you know. So yeah, it's sort of similar to season one where that last episode, when Jamie is sort of trying to process what's happened to him, and then it's like, okay, we're going to France. And it's like, what is happening? You know, it's just moving very fast. And I wish that they sort of took some time to have those episodes, like when they're at Lollybrock or different places where you kind of really get a feel, because it's so beautiful, like this world that they've created. And sometimes I just feel like we're running through it.
Right, yeah. Like they're more concerned with getting characters from point A to point B to just burn through, I guess, what is an enormous book, right, Mary? It's just like it's a huge.
It's ginormous. It really, really is. That's honestly my biggest chief complaint, is that there aren't enough hours of television to give the show the justice, because that's it. People who haven't read the books don't know the full story, or there's things that we'd like to explore, or there's feelings that we feel like they need to breathe a little bit. So that's my chief complaint, and that's nobody's fault, but I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, like, when they kill Dougal, spoiler alert, when they kill Dougal, I thought it was great that they did it as a team, but I wanted to sit with that moment. I wanted I wanted that to sink in. I wanted that to just be the main focus. And then as you said, Allison, okay, we're out. See you later. Gotta go. You know, like, what?
Something like Galus, I didn't realize that she had, like, murdered her husband and set him on fire. Like, I didn't know. I was like, did she ever, like, mention this before, like, that this happened? And then all of a sudden you just, like, see this burning body, and you're just like, oh, my God. Like, what? Like, she's through the stones. Like, it just seemed like another one of those things that you didn't have time to even comprehend and what it meant for her character. And I was trying to think back of everything that I knew of her before, and I was like, would I have known she was capable of this? Like, why did she do this? I don't have a sense of that. There were just so many things that were great, you know, as you're going through it. But I think also, you know, I really thought that Blackjack was dead after season one. And when he came back, I was like, oh no, like I can't go through this again. He's just, and everything that happened with his brother, and it started to almost humanize him. I mean, and Claire's making this decision to, like, have Mary, like, be his wife. And I just think, because, I mean, season one, I mean, those two final episodes were still so fresh in my mind, even after all that time. I mean, they scarred me, like, for life. And I was just thinking back, and I was like, I'm tired of this character. I mean, this is no fault of Tobias Menzies, because he's amazing, but just the Blackjack, like, he won't die, he won't go away, he's in Paris, he's in Scotland, like, he's just this shadow that just never leaves them. Yeah. And I don't know if that's a frustration that you guys have or book fans have or anything, but I just kind of was ready for them to move on and have a new foe, you know, that they needed to fight against.
You know, Allison, I love reading all of your work. I love going to Collider, and usually we agree on a lot of things, but between, you know, the leftovers and wanting to cut the 40s out of the premiere and liking France and now cutting Blackjack, you're breaking my heart. You are totally.
I'm never going to be invited back on this podcast.
That's it. You know what? I'm cutting it short. You're out. No. That's great. I felt like they kind of shoehorned Blackjack in there for season two. And whether or not that's part of the written text, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that it is a little bit. But yeah, he felt shoehorned in there, like they needed something to happen with him. And I wish it happened a tad more organically. But, you know, hey, it is what it is. Tell me, aside from Preston Pans, what was your favorite episode of season two? Or if that isn't it, what is the favorite that you have?
Oh, gosh. Preston Pans is probably my favorite, but there were so many that were so good. I really think that, I mean, Faith is just such a powerful episode because Katrina Balfe is just so incredible in it. And I just was so depressed after I watched it. And because, but in a good way, because it's really rare that a TV show in any particular episode really makes me want to cry. It's just a really rare thing. I mean, it's rare that I feel that connected to the characters and the story so much that whatever is happening has, like, deeply emotionally affected me in that hour. Especially because I always watch Outlander in the morning afterwards. You know, it's like sunny and nice and it's like crying. But I thought that episode was so powerful. And, you know, I mean, even though that's the one that had the weird, like, witch stuff in the end, which I really was not a huge fan of, and also had the situation with Claire and, you know, and the king, and I didn't love that. The first part of the episode when Claire is having to basically decide whether she wants to live or die after this, mm-hmm. And that Jamie isn't there, and this is all her, you know, having to, like, find her strength and decide to continue on with what it is that she's, you know, been working so hard towards for that season, to try to stop this battle. And I just thought it was really, really powerful and amazing work from her. And I'm trying to think. I know that they're probably like a. I picked like the two darkest episodes of this season. I know that there are like lighter episodes that I liked. I actually really liked the finale for the most part, just because it was so different from anything we'd seen. And again, it showed a different side to Claire. And I did not know that Jamie was alive. I really thought that they had killed him off, and somehow she was like going to go back to some other time with him. I had no idea. So I was just fascinated by all of that. And season three sounds like it's going to be completely insane. Like, as far, like, they're in Jamaica, and as again, as someone who hasn't read the books, I'm just like, I don't know what is happening with this, but I'm very excited for it. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you, so I'm curious about you guys. Like, what are your favorite episodes from the season?
I'm right there with you with Faith. I'm on like the depressing train, I guess. But because it was so powerful to watch, and really, I already loved Katrina as an actor, and that episode just blew my mind with, uh-huh. with her acting chops. So that was definitely up there. And the finale, as cliche as it is, gave me all the feels. I mean, yeah. I laughed and cried and held my breath and laughed some more. It was beautiful. I just wish every episode could be 90 minutes because I was able to have that full range of emotions and
yes.
to be able to really go on a journey with them in that episode. And that's kind of what I want in each episode of Outlander, because this world is so dense and these characters are so layered. I loved having that time to really explore with them. So I'm jumping on the same train of having Faith and the finale. How about you, Blake?
I would say Faith was my favorite episode of all of Outlander until the finale happened, actually. When I watched the finale, I actually felt like we had enough time, as I said before, to sit with those characters and let mm-hmm. them kind of wash over us. You know, the small moments of, you know, Claire looking at Brianna's hair and being reminded of Jamie, and even Brianna's anger with her mother. I felt that was real, and they allowed that to happen. And other things like Claire going to Lallybroch as it was broken down and hearing all
yes.
the things. You know, I really felt that that was something that was important to Claire and thereby should be important to us as for, you know, to like her character.
I'm glad that you mentioned that scene too, because when she was there and having these memories, like I was like, I was there and having these yeah. memories, and I was like about to cry. And it was just because we had just seen, you know, this, I mean, that scene between her and Jamie when he's telling her to go back and like Frank will take care of her. I was like, because I think I told you guys in season one that I was like maybe a little bit team Frank, but no, by that time I was like 100% team Jamie. So I was like crying, like, Jamie, no, like, but it's so right, it's so wrong.
Oh my God, you've gone off the Frank train. You're killing me. You're killing me, Allison. You know, it's funny because I will say that Jamie has really grown on me after this season. And
yeah.
seeing him in the mist underneath the archway as she's looking out, I really felt that was a real powerful moment for us, the viewers, and for Claire as a character. I really felt like she – you could sense her pain, her regret, even her anger, all of that. And I – oh, my God. And that's why I ended up loving the finale as much as I did. I think that was a great episode.
And I wonder if sort of they did dial back the sexuality in season two, maybe to drive home the point that, like, I mean, because in season one, it's kind of the joke, right? Like, oh, she goes back and meets like this super hot Highlander. Like, of course she's going to like fall for him. And cause you know, she's in this other time and he's protecting her and they're this great. But I think in season two, like it developed their connection so strongly that by the time that she went back to Frank, it was like, it was another world. I mean, this was the love of her life, and you felt that, I think, in a really real way, mm-hmm. Where it's like, you know, yes, she had this life with Frank that was fine, and he was, you know, a good husband, and everything was, you know, he took care of them. But her obsession with Jamie, I think, in season two, it really drove home, like, it wasn't just the physicality and the romance of these Scottish moors. It was really because they truly had a connection with their personalities. with who they really are, and they sort of grew together, I think, in season two, in a way that I thought was really beautiful. So maybe that's a reason why, I don't know, but still, I agree that it should have been a little more, maybe.
So what are you looking forward to most as we get ready to see season three? I mean, not really get ready, it's a while away, but what are you looking forward to most?
Oh my, I just seeing what the heck is going on, because at this point I don't know. Like, I've heard these rumors and I try not to read too much or hear too much because I would like to be surprised, and that's one reason why I still haven't read the books, because I did that with Game of Thrones and it kind of ruined it, because I was always comparing the books and the show. Even if I didn't want to, it was just always in my mind. I was expecting something to happen or waiting for something to happen. And so for season three, it's like, yeah, I've heard Jamaica, I've heard, like, you know, several different things, and then maybe they're a little older, and so I don't know. But season two really turned me around on Outlander. You know, season one I liked, but season two I just adored, and so I'm excited. And it is a really long time. Like, that's back.
A couple of bigger questions I have here for you. Mm-hmm. Lions, for those who don't know, Lionsgate has now acquired Stars, the channel. Is that correct?
Oh, actually, you know what? I should know this.
Is it vice versa?
I would think that Lionsgate probably acquired Stars.
Right.
I'm furiously Googling this. Right.
Yeah, well, I will keep talking to save you. How's that sound?
Thank you.
You're welcome. So it's my knowledge that Lionsgate has, in fact, acquired Stars. And they're going to try to put their own material on Stars, I imagine. Mm-hmm. Now, with this acquisition, and I know I asked this question to you last episode, and I think I'm going to ask you this question every single episode that we do. Do you feel that Outlander is now on the precipice of taking the next step to becoming the next, I don't want to say zeitgeist show that, you know, the American public has now can't get enough of, it just wants to consume, you know, a la Game of Thrones or The Walking Dead. But do you think it is ready to take that next step in light of Lionsgate and that popularity and that kind of big company acquiring Stars?
Well, from this Variety article that I just scanned, so Lionsgate did acquire Stars, but basically what that means is that they're just going to be running more of their movies on Stars and having their catalog available on Stars.
Okay.
And so basically, like, Stars, like so many other channels, well, like everyone right now, I mean, seriously, everyone wants original content and programming. And so Stars has obviously really expanded in the last few years. So what that means is they may not have as many hours to have more original programming, but they'll also have Lionsgate's entire catalog, which basically just makes it a lot easier for people at home to access those movies through the Stars app or just through having cable and being able to DVR it. So I don't actually think that it will affect Outlander all that much. I don't know if that'll affect their budgets at all. I think they already kind of, you know, are given. Probably, I can't think of another show on Stars, actually, that even comes close to using that kind of budget. But I think that season two, when I wrote up about the finale, I think I said in the headline something like, it quietly had the best season, or one of the best seasons of the year. And some people on Twitter took umbrage to that. They're like, it wasn't quiet at all. And I said, well, it was outside of the fandom. Because to me, I don't know anyone that watches Outlander besides two of my friends that love the books, you know, and watch the show. But when I'm, you know, talking to friends saying, like, what are you guys watching? And Stars is still a pretty small channel. You know, they don't have a huge viewership. They're not HBO or even Showtime. So they don't have as big of an audience. And I think really that's a shame for Outlander. And I mean, Stars also has some other programming that I really like, but I thought that season two just really didn't get noticed enough. I wasn't seeing enough editorials on it. I wasn't seeing a lot of tweets on it. And I'm not in, you know, like the Outlander fandom on Twitter. So I don't, you know, I mean, you guys probably see like a ton of stuff about it all the time, but if you're kind of outside that a little bit, you really didn't see a lot of buzz. And, you know, season one got it because it was like, oh, there's like all the sex and, like, you know, this is big adaptation and everybody's, you know, really excited for it. But I thought season two sort of didn't get enough attention, and I don't know how that might change. I mean, Lionsgate, you know, their influence or their money might promote it more. We might see more commercials or something leading up to it. But I don't know. I think I think that it's a shame that people aren't as excited and know about Outlander as much as Game of Thrones, because I think that Outlander is actually getting better, whereas Game of Thrones for a while was kind of took a some weird turns in quality. But I think it's a show too that, and I think we talked about this last time I was on, but that people sort of dismiss as being a woman's show, you know, like, oh, it's a historical romance, so guys aren't interested in it. But of course, that's part of it. It is a historical, you know, romance, but it's also, I mean, especially in season two, it's about realpolitik and political intrigue. And like we talked about Preston Pans and the battles, there's a lot of talk about battle strategies. That's sort of what's happening. And you can follow along in history and sort of see who these real characters were, in some cases. And so it's something that I think people still are not understanding is just like a really great, well-rounded action series and romance and thriller and historical, you know, all these things at once. So I don't know. We just have to keep getting the word out.
Yeah, why do you think that it's kind of hit the press with kind of like a oomph, you know, like, okay, there it is, that's Outlander. Like, is it because of that whole idea that it's just a woman's show and not everybody pays attention to it?
Maybe. I mean, that's a terrible thing, right? Like, even if it is a woman, it's so, like,
right, I know. And I'm not saying I agree with it, but, like, it's possible. Yeah. And is that – do you think that's a valid reason?
Yeah, I think that it might be something that that might not – that might turn people off of it from looking for it or trying to watch it or experience it. I think that – I just really don't know. I think a lot of people, like I said, I think Starz just kind of has a small viewership. I don't know what their numbers are. I know they're a lot smaller than HBO for sure. But I think that sort of their fledgling audience, you know, more and more people are cutting the cord with cable. They do, I think, though, you can purchase Starz through Hulu. Is that right? Like, there's like for like $8.
And Amazon, I think, too.
Okay, yeah. So it might be the sort of thing where people are sort of catching up on it in the off seasons too, when it's on streaming, and then they're not really finding a community necessarily that's like talking about it week to week. So maybe they don't know to engage with it. So we just don't know. There may be like a ton of secret Outlander fans that we don't know about. But yeah, just there is so much TV, and I can understand, you know, some shows just don't get, they just can't get the attention. But Outlander definitely deserved it this year, and I really thought it was done a disservice. Mm-hmm. There were a couple too. I mean, Penny Dreadful kind of was under the rug this year too. People didn't really pay that much attention to it. And that was another one I thought deserved it. And
especially after its surprise season three finale, like all of a sudden,
so mad.
Yeah, you know, like, what?
Also, because I was like two episodes behind, because I didn't realize it was the finale, and I certainly didn't know it was the series finale, and so I didn't get a chance to write anything on it, and I was really mad about it. But yeah, I think that it's just really hard to get noticed when there's so many shows, and, you know, I don't know what the issue is with Outlander, but I think that I don't know what it's going to take, really. And I think that season one had a lot of buzz, but season two didn't. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. I don't know what to tell people to look for season three, though, because I don't know what's going to happen. Like, just get on board for the ride, people, because you're not going to know what's coming. And it's kind of
thing. My final question for you is actually I had a challenge for all of our listeners to find another show to watch. I mean, a lot of them repeat Outlander over and over and over again, and that is amazing. But I kind of want them to see other shows too, to see how great Outlander is and what it, you know, the kind of impact it can have on television. You know, my challenge for them was to watch Halt and Catch Fire. That's my new favorite show, like, on the planet.
I heard it's gotten a lot better from season one.
Yes.
Thank God, because I dropped off after season one, and I finally started season two, and I was like, oh, it does get better. Okay.
Actually,
I have two. Oh, go ahead.
No, please.
I have two recommendations, actually, for shows for Outlander fans to watch. Knowing that you guys were going to ask something else to watch. One of them is Poldark. Have you guys watched that on PBS?
No, but we are dying to watch that show. We have yet to see it.
It is excellent. So for anyone that hasn't watched, it stars Aidan Turner, who you may know as the hot dwarf from The Hobbit movies. he's still really hot. And it's just this really interesting show that I believe was a remake of a show that came out in the 70s. It's based on a novel series. It takes place in the late 18th century, and Aidan Turner's character, Ross Poldark, comes back to England after having fought in the American War of Independence, Revolutionary War, and his whole life is gone, basically. The mine that his family owned is defunct. His father has died. His love of his life is engaged to his cousin, and he just comes back to nothing, and so he sort of has to pick himself up and find his new life, and it's just gorgeously filmed. The actors are amazing. There is a love story there that is unexpected, and I won't spoil it, but it is so beautiful, and the way that it plays out throughout the season is just like heartbreaking and wonderful. And I'm super excited for season two, which I think starts at the end of September. So it was on PBS. So I think streaming wise, it should be on Amazon, and it might actually be on pbs.org to stream. But yeah, highly, highly recommend that. And also, did you guys catch the adaptation of War and Peace that aired on Lifetime?
No, I didn't even hear about this.
Because why is it on Lifetime, right? Why is it not on PBS? It was amazing. Andrew Davies, who basically has adapted all of your favorite British things in the past like 10 years. You loved a miniseries, and it came from England. Andrew Davies probably did the adaptation. It was gorgeous and amazing and heartbreaking. Again, beautiful historical love story and tragedy and war. And it is a mini series, so I think it ran for 4 episodes, but each one was, I think, an hour and a half or 2 hours long. And that, I also don't know where that's available. Maybe Amazon, maybe Hulu actually feels like maybe it's on there, but check around for it because it is definitely worth it. It's another one of my just best series of the year. It blew me away.
Awesome.
So they're sort of in the same vein as Outlander in certain ways. There's no time travel, but as far as historical romance goes, they definitely are a good way to get through the Droughtlander.
Well, thank you so much. And you know what makes Droughtlander easy is interviews like this one and being able to rehash what I believe is one of the best seasons of television. I had so much fun just watching this season, and I'm so glad to hear that you enjoyed watching season 2 of Outlander as well, Allison. It's always a great time to chat with you. For those of you who haven't heard Allison's interview before, it is episode 31 of Outlander Cast. So if you're killing some time in Droughtlander, feel free to head on back to episode 31 to check that one out. And
yeah. Allison, where can our listeners find you, either on Twitter or through Collider, or where can they find you in the online sphere?
Yeah, well, you guys can go to Collider.com or Collider.com/TV, or you can follow me on Twitter at KeenTV. That's KEENETV.
Awesome. Once again, Allison, it has been an absolute joy to have you here on Outlander Cast. We're going to have you back again. You're definitely one of our favorite people to have on as an interview.
It's so much fun. You guys just let me ramble, and I'm so sorry, but also thank you. I'm just so excited to talk about it, and it's been really great. Thank you guys a lot.
I always feel bad because I have to bite my tongue. You're one of the few people that we do speak with that hasn't read the books. So normally I get to have like inside jokes with other people, and we're like, oh, Blake, you'll see. You'll find out. And I just have to bite my tongue so much for poor you and Blake, since you don't know what's coming, but I told Blake, hold on to your butts, because season 3, it's a good book. It's Voyager's a really good book, so you guys are going to have a lot of fun.
I'm excited.
All right, Allison, thank you so much.
Thank y'all.
Blake.
Yeah.
It feels good to talk about Outlander again.
Doesn't
right?
it?
I really... So a lot of you have been sending us some emails, some very, very sweet emails saying, hello, it's Droughtlander. Where have you guys been? And you've made it through the interview. You stuck around. And I feel like I need to let you know a little bit. So Blake and I suddenly decided that we needed to move again. Okay. We pretty much move every 2 years, and I've gotten pregnant every 2 years. So
here's
hoping nothing happens, because I do not need another Outlander baby right now. I got two babies. I'm all set right now.
No, two's enough.
But we're moving, and we put our house on the market, and we have found a home all within pretty much a month and a half's time. So things have been just outrageously crazy. We have spent every single moment searching at houses, bringing our children to houses, feeding them junk food because we don't have time time to cook because we're looking at...
we've eaten Wendy's at least 4 or 5 times within the past 7 or 8 days.
It's so true. It's so sad. I just reach French fries back and I'm like, here, children, I promise when we're done finding houses, I'll feed you fruit and veggies again. So you know, Outlander Cast is like our third baby and we adore podcasting. We adore the community of Outlander. And I feel like we've really neglected Outlander Cast, and I wanted to let you guys know why. And we're back in it. We just needed to find a home.
We found the home. We have yet to move in, although we are moving in October 1st. That as we record this today, it's September 4th.
But we found a home.
We found a home.
We're still in Rhode Island.
We're going to move in, and I'm building a brand new studio, custom built studio. So we're going to sound even better next time around.
But I just felt like we needed to, you know, be straight with you guys and let you know where we've been. And that's really the scoop. So I think
for the next time they hear from us, we're going to be in the new house.
I don't think, maybe, maybe not. It depends.
Right. Well, in the new studio, we'll put it that way.
There you go.
I'm going to try. Maybe the first thing we should do in the new house is record a podcast. What do you think?
I would like to feed my children an apple first.
Maybe some grapes.
Yes.
No more French fries. No more chicken nuggets.
Poor things.
They're going to have like high cholesterol by the time they're four.
So that's the scoop with Mary and Blake. Exciting things are coming. We have a lot planned for Droughtlander. Some great things have been happening up on the Outlander Cast blog. And the other thing that I need to make sure that you guys know about is the Casties.
That's right. We created, and the people and the staff, the wonderful staff at Outlander Cast blog, they have created the Casties, which is our own, the fans vote over what we think is the best parts of Outlander, the best director, the best actor, the best cinematography, the best scene, all those things. It's all part of the Casties, the Outlander Casties. And it's our own little version of the Academy Awards, because I got to admit, as Allison had mentioned earlier in this interview, Outlander got snubbed, and it's really annoying. So we decided to come up with our own award system.
So the results are in, and we are going to be announcing them live.
Ooh, are we?
This week, buddy.
Oh.
Now you need to keep your eyes on our social media. We are Outlandercast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook to know exactly the time and place. But we will be announcing the winners of the Casties live.
Whoa.
So you tune in, guys. You tune in.
Look at you.
I know. Now that we have a home, are we going to do it on Periscope?
Are we going to do it on Facebook Live? Are we doing a full show?
Listen,
what are we doing?
You just have to look out to our social media and I'll let you know.
Oh, so this is the professional tease then?
Yeah.
This is why we got the Emmy Award.
Hey.
This is why we got the Marconi Award.
There you go.
You know, we get the professional teases. We're better than Imus. You know, we're better than Howard Stern. Right? No? You don't think so?
I don't know about that, but sure.
Sure, why not?
So,
at least in my head, we are.
All right, let's close out the show.
All right, let's do it, my love.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gents. Once again, thanks so much for listening to Outlander Cast. Don't forget, we have a community to keep you company during Droughtlander. It's our Facebook group. It's the Clan Gathering. So if you head on over to Facebook and you type in Outlander Cast Clan Gathering, that is for show watchers, book readers, non-book readers, everybody. But if you are a book reader and you're like, OMG, poor Mary needs to chat with someone about Voyager because she just had this interview where she was quiet the entire time, twiddling her thumbs, thinking, you know nothing, Jon Snow. Well, you can go over to the Outlander Cast Clan Book Club.
Ooh.
Okay? That's like the super VIP group. VIP meaning it's free. It's Facebook. Come and join us. Come chat about the books. Let's chat about what we're looking forward to seeing in season 3. Let's keep each other company on Facebook. You guys are the best. You're my online friends, who I feel like are my real life friends in real life.
No, they're not friends. They're not friends.
They're my family.
They're family. That's what it is. That's how it works. You know, and go to the Outlander Cast Clan Gathering. Wow, say that 5 times fast.
Yeah.
Community to keep you company is also one of those ones that you should... See, I like that. Anyway, go to the Outlander Cast clan gathering and enjoy the community that we have all built there together. It's a very special place, and you get to interact with myself and Mary on a very personal level and almost immediately as well. And in addition to all of the fantastic writers and the editor-in-chief, Kendra, or the associate editor, Ashley, or, you know, anybody that writes on the blog staff, you can interact with them directly there. So if you have questions about an article they read or an article that they wrote or whatever, you can get in touch with us there and all the other thousands of Outlander fans that make a really cool and really, like, civil group. I've been in groups where the groups are just, like, really catty and gross and nasty, and all I want to do is just punch them in the face. But this one is actually a really nice group. I really appreciate it. So, guys, as always, much love to you. Hopefully the next time we speak with you, we will be in the new, brand spanking new studio, and hopefully we'll sound even that much better. I mean, I think the quality is pretty good that we got here going on right now. But still, I'm hoping that we sound a little bit better.
And I really appreciate all of your patience. We weren't, like, too certain we were moving. And then suddenly we were like, oh, we are. We are moving. So it's been a whirlwind for the Larson clan. And I'm just really excited to be back with Outlander and back with you all. So reach out to the communities. We're here for you.
All Outlander cast. That's it. That's all we got.
All right. My name's Mary.
Wait, no.
What?
You're supposed to say, I'm Mary, and then my name is Blake.
Shoot. See, that's how long this has been. I didn't even know.
We're totally out of touch.
Okay. So what do I say?
I'm Mary.
I'm Mary.
My name's Blake.
My name's Blake.
No, your name's not Blake. My name's Blake.
Okay. Yeah. I'm Mary.
My name's Blake.
And you've been listening to Outlander Cast.
A complete, utter shit show.